mayors and governors must establish an overwhelming law enforcement presence until the violence has been quelled.
President Trump announces a very controversial answer to continuing violent protest. It's Wednesday, June 3rd, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. Also coming your way, these latest protests have proven dangerous to quite a few journalists. We will explore that. The pandemic is bringing some major changes to the way hotels operate, and a rural Minnesota baker has brought smiles to many people graduating high school. It is all on today's VOA Asia. As protests left the country in turmoil, President Donald Trump addressed the nation Monday evening, declaring himself the president of law and order and threatening to deploy the United States military to cities and states that refuse to take the actions that are necessary to defend the life and property of their residents. White House correspondent Patsy Whitaker-Swera has this story.
As demonstrators protested peacefully near the White House Monday evening, a surprise announcement from President Donald Trump. He declared that acts of domestic terror have been committed by violent demonstrators and vowed to end what he called riots and lawlessness that have spread across the country.
Today, I have strongly recommended to every governor to deploy the National Guard in sufficient numbers that we dominate the streets. Mayors and governors must establish an overwhelming law enforcement presence until the violence has been quelled. If a city or state refuses to take the actions that are necessary to defend the life and property of their residents, then I will deploy the United States military and quickly solve the problem for them.
As Trump spoke, the sound of tear gas being fired echoed from a nearby park where security forces were clearing the protests. Despite his threat, Trump did not invoke the Insurrection Act, which the White House press secretary has said he is considering. The 1807 law gives the president authority to deploy active duty troops to states without a request from the governor. The president had been under pressure to address the nation after days of demonstrations around the country, mostly peaceful but some marred with looting and violence, sparked by the death of George Floyd.
What was his name?
George Floyd!
The black man died May 25th after a white police officer held his knee on the man's neck for more than 8 minutes. In his remarks, Trump said that justice for Floyd will be served, but he did not address the racial inequality and police violence that the protesters have been decrying. After his remarks, Trump walked to St. John's Episcopal Church about a block north of the White House, where just minutes earlier protesters had been cleared away with tear gas. The historic church suffered minor damage the previous evening when a small fire was set in its basement.
We have a great country.
Trump did not go into the church, but stood outside holding up a Bible. Presidential rhetoric scholar Jennifer Marsicha said Trump appeared to be trying to convey a message of strength to his supporters.
It's no accident that the television cameras caught him walking past the graffiti. I think that it was really important for him to have that shot of him holding up the Bible. And I think that that was really a part of what he wanted to convey as the image of this moment, which is a president of the United States who's standing in front of a boarded up church, sort of defiant against protesters.
Thank you very much, everybody.
After Trump's visit, the Episcopal Bishop of Washington, the Right Reverend Marion Buddy, said she is outraged by the president's visit and the manner in which the area was secured for his appearance. Buddy accused the president of inciting violence and using one of the most sacred symbols of the Judeo-Christian tradition. Patsy Whitaker-Swera, VOA News, Washington.
There were other protest demonstrations, some of them violent, around the United States. New York City moved its curfew up to 8 p.m. after another night of chaos and looting was not curtailed by the 11 p.m. curfew it imposed. Associated Press correspondent Julie Walker reports.
Macy's flagship store in Herald Square was the latest to be broken into, while fancy shops in Soho and other parts of Manhattan, as well as minority-owned businesses in the Bronx, were also looted. Some who were there to peacefully protest tried to stop them. Police made hundreds of arrests, and in the process say about half a dozen cops were injured, but none critically, including one captured on video being hit by a car. During the day, there were loud but peaceful marches demanding justice for George Floyd and others killed by police, as well as reforms. Julie Walker, New York.
We invite you to read more on our top story by following our Twitter stream at VOA Asia. We're also on Facebook, VOA Asia, and the voanews.com website. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now at voanews.com. Bangladesh confirms the first coronavirus death among the nearly 1 million Rohingyas living in the country's overcrowded refugee camps. 46 days without local coronavirus infections let Vietnam reopen and gain an advantage over other economies. State-owned Chinese firms bought at least three cargoes of U.S. soybeans Monday, even as sources in China said the government had told them to halt purchases. Japan's top baseball players got their first taste of competitive action Tuesday, more than 10 weeks after the scheduled start of the season as warm-up matches were held across the country. Expanded coverage of these stories and more on Facebook at VOA Asia and on the voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. As peaceful and some chaotic protests continue across the country and many cities put in place curfews, there is increasing concern about journalists being targeted by police with rubber bullets, tear gas, and arrest as they cover the demonstrations. President Trump blamed the protest on the, quote, lamestream media. Dr. Courtney Rash, advocacy director with the Committee to Protect Journalists, talks with VOA's Lori London for reaction and how they're monitoring the ongoing situation.
We are pretty shocked by what we're seeing around the country as police seem to have been targeting journalists as they have been cracking down on protests around the country. It's really shocking to see police arresting journalists who have identified themselves as such, and as well as putting them into really dangerous situations, firing rubber bullets, firing tear gas, and essentially refusing to allow the press to do their job safely.
Why do you think this is happening? This is not really something we have seen in the United States. We've seen this in other places. Why do you think it's happening now?
So actually, I think that we have seen this in the United States at protests. We know that journalists are often put in really dangerous situations, both by police. For example, remember the Ferguson protests, the Standing Rock protest in 2016, Occupy Wall Street. And they're also caught up, you know, in the protesters who are angry and not always happy with how the media are portraying the protests. So what we see is protests are flashpoints for attacks on journalists. But what is new is that the scale of these protests are nationwide. And it does seem that there are anecdotal reports of police who are actually targeting journalists. You know, we've seen some of these on live TV, and that is the real shocker.
I'm seeing the headline to a Reuters article that says open season on the free press. Granted, yes, journalists are always putting their lives at risk when they are covering serious things like this. But I think, yes, like you said, the magnitude of this is just sort of stunning to see journalists standing there, I'm the press, and being put in handcuffs and not just getting injured in the midst of it or even appearing to be directly targeted, but actually being arrested for reporting.
It is shocking to see journalists who've been arrested, including while live on air reporting. We've seen this in several states throughout the country. So this is not just the CNN journalists who are arrested, but it's really problematic as well that after we even heard an apology from the governor, that we still saw anti-press violence by police forces there. What's really concerning is journalists who are reporting that they identify themselves as journalists and were still attacked. It seems like the police don't care and that is offering no protection. So one of the things that the Committee to Protect Journalists has done is put out some updated safety advice for any journalists who are covering these protests. Also remembering that we are still in the midst of the coronavirus pandemic, and there are some serious health risks costs as well to covering these protests. One thing I would add that we're really concerned about reports from journalists that seem to indicate that journalists of color have been targeted in some of these cases, including the CNN case on Friday, where there was a journalist of color who was arrested live on air while his colleague, who's white, was not arrested and was allowed to report freely. We've seen other reports of that. We're still investigating and trying to document these cases. But if that is a case, we're deeply, deeply concerned.
Dr. Courtney Rash, Advocacy Director with the Committee to Protect Journalists, speaking with VOA's Lori London. Happening now in Asia, a coronavirus outbreak in a Hong Kong residential estate has sparked warnings from the city's chief executive, prompting the government to extend existing social distancing measures that are about to expire. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We are happy you're with us on VOA Asia. Most of California's counties have relaxed coronavirus restrictions that had shut down restaurants for weeks. And on this past weekday's Memorial Day, holiday big crowds flooded eateries in Orange County's Huntington Beach. Most customers and restaurants violated social distancing guidelines, as Jania Dulo reports from Los Angeles. Anna Rice narrates her report.
On Memorial Day weekend, 54 of the 58 California counties allowed restaurants to open for in-dining service. There were many rules to be observed, including bigger spaces between tables, disinfecting of the dining halls and furniture, as well as disposable menus. Huntington Beach, a city some 50 kilometers away from Los Angeles, sees a few million tourists every year. The main factor that keeps just over 600 of the city's restaurants afloat. All of the eateries were closed during the state's strict coronavirus lockdown, but now are reopening their doors to diners.
I haven't been here since I out and gotten anything to eat since March, since the beginning. This is our first time. This feels great. I didn't expect this many people, and this is just amazing. It's so fun. It's like life is returning, you know?
Restaurants were allowed to open in counties that have seen a fall in the number of coronavirus cases and that have registered less than 25 new cases per 100,000 people. But the positive decline in cases seems to have caused many to ignore social distancing rules. That panicked some diners.
It's better be safe than sorry. It's scary, though. I'm not going to come down here again until there's a vaccine. It's been my last time until maybe sometime next year, because I ain't coming down again. It's busy, scary, because you don't know who are infected and who are not infected.
Others felt very differently.
I believe if people are so nervous about getting the coronavirus, they have the right to stay home. They don't have the right to tell us anymore. We can go to banks, we can go to fast food places. I'm just not buying. We can still go on airplanes. We still handle money, so really, is a restaurant any different?
Restaurants that chose to ignore the rules might affect the work of law-abiding ones, like Duke's, that is planning to reopen after 10 weeks of complete closure.
We've done our new floor maps and labeled every table with how many we can seat at it. So it's going to take a little bit more management from our end. I know, and I went by a restaurant up the street, and it was just operating. I'd never seen them full before, but they're operating normally, and that's going to get us in trouble. Not just them, but it's going to get all of us in trouble, and we'll revert back to being closed again, and that we don't want that.
Under the rules, restaurants only will be able to operate at maximum half of their normal capacity. Jania Dulu for VOA News, Huntington Beach, California.
VOA Asia Facebook is the choice of millions to see and read the latest stories about Asia and the United States. Follow us on VOA Asia Facebook. VOA Asia is also on Twitter and YouTube. Subscribe to all of our platforms for free. See, hear, read, and share all the latest from VOA Asia anytime. VOA Asia is your trusted source for news, information, and great features.
This news from VOA Asia. Tokyo issued a coronavirus alert for the Japanese capital Tuesday amid fear of a resurgence of the infections only a week after a state of emergency was lifted. All of the big stories come your way through the day at VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. I'm Ira Melman. As the U.S. is gradually reopening after many weeks of strict lockdown, hotels are about to start welcoming visitors again. Their owners need to figure out a way to provide traditional hospitality services with health and safety in mind. Medical experts and analysts of the industry believe a lot will change, from new cleaning protocols to how room keys are handled. Licia Bacalé has the story.
Shuttered hotels are about to come back to life in America, but things won't be the same. Leading the way are iconic hotel chains Four Seasons and Hilton.
Four Seasons has aligned with Johns Hopkins University to come up with a new, they're calling it Stay Safe, some sort of a safety program. Hilton has an alliance with the Mayo Clinic. So hotels have already put out protocols for their hotels to follow.
The American Hotel and Lodging Association has developed special recommendations regarding hotel room cleaning. After a room has been cleaned, it will be sealed and only the customer can break the seal when entering. Plus, common areas in hotels will have to be cleaned several times a day. And hotels are changing their attitude towards laundry.
The guests' laundry will be washed by one person wearing gloves and masks, put into plastic bags, and taken up to the room.
All contact between guests and staff will be reduced to an absolute minimum. Checking in, as well as paying, will be done online.
So pretty much now you can check into the hotel using your phone. You check into your room using your phone. Everything that works in the room, from your TV, etc., could be done on your phone. And you're very much not sort of touching anybody.
Safety precautions encourage hotels to get rid of unnecessary decor as well. One hotel chain in Costa Rica, for example, decided to reduce the number of items on the nightstand.
If you look at a night table in a normal hotel, you know, there might be an alarm clock, there might be a pen and paper, there might be a directory.
Hotel restaurants will also have to change the way they operate. Tables will be placed 2 meters away from each other, menus will change, and buffets will disappear.
We won't have menus that we give to the guests, so they will be mostly on boards. You know, we'll show it to them.
A small family hotel in Massachusetts came up with a unique way to serve up breakfast.
What we're going to do is we're going to have picnic baskets that we've already gotten, and then everything's going to be picnic-oriented. So we'll talk to the guests before they get here about what they generally like for their breakfast, and then they'll come up and pick up their picnic basket.
Las Vegas is among the first cities to start implementing new norms. There, it is not just hotels and restaurants that are getting ready to reopen under new rules, but casinos as well.
There's a certain number of people that can only stand at the dice table.
Most hotels hope to reopen in early June, but only allow 50% of guests compared to the pre-pandemic times. For Lisa Bacalets in Washington, Anna Rice, VOA News.
A message from your friends at VOA Asia. Wash your hands with soap and water before you eat, after using the toilet, after touching anything many other people touch, like a seat on a public bus. Scrub thoroughly for 20 seconds. If you cannot wash your hands, use a hand sanitizer. Taking these steps can prevent not only coronavirus, but also colds and flu and other viruses. A message from your friends at VOA Asia.
VOA Asia continues. Red Wing, a small rural town in Minnesota, is sweetening some of its pandemic blues with help from a local baker. He has taken it upon himself to brighten the day of the local high school graduates who will not be having formal graduation ceremonies by baking them free graduation cakes. VOA caught up with the baker as he was running around town to deliver his delectable promises.
Bill Hainish has been a baker for 25 years at the Hainish Bakery and Coffee Shop in Red Wing, Minnesota, a town of 17,000 people. The family business resonates with the community now more than ever. Residents have been touched by measures brought to contain the coronavirus, including a canceled high school graduation ceremony. To ease that, Hainish decided to donate 200 cakes for his town's graduates.
So the idea was, essentially, we're going to produce cakes for Red Wing, and they're all going to be free of charge to the students.
News spread through social media, and people in surrounding towns wanted to order cakes for their high school graduates, too. Hainish could not foot the bill for 12 towns and 800 cakes, but donations started pouring in from all over the country.
We have got support from Canada to Florida to Texas to California. It's been amazing.
The donations cover the costs of labor and materials for the cakes. Hainish does not make any profit, but he manages to keep his 21 employees working at a time that many businesses are closing due to the pandemic.
It's really been a win-win for everybody because the kids are getting a graduation cake. They're getting this great experience. The communities are coming together to support these kids and helping out to give those experiences. And it's also helping us to maintain business, keep employees employed.
The best part, he says, is when he gets to deliver the cakes and meet happy faces.
We're very appreciative of Hainish Bakery and their willingness to donate cakes to our student body and the people that helped support this and donated money to help as well.
Thank you for doing this. It's appreciated a lot.
We have gotten and received a lot of thank yous, pictures of smiling kids holding the cakes, stories of just how the cake made it extra special for these graduates. There's just this feeling that you just can't describe it. It's just awesome.
Penelope Pulu, VOA News, Washington.
In the new pandemic normal, video conferencing has become a staple for everything, from business meetings to virtual social gatherings and class lessons. While this way of communicating gets the job done, it is not perfect, and people struggle with interruptions. An alternative is a meeting in virtual reality. VOA's Elizabeth Lee reports.
If you've been on one of these calls, you've probably experienced people talking over each other. And then there's this.
If someone's dog comes into it or someone stops paying attention,
then you might miss what someone is saying. Ryan Otten's online business class in virtual reality or VR eliminates the distractions of a video conference call.
I can't see my phone. I can't see an email pop up. So I'm fully focused on a great learning environment.
Pagoni VR, through its project Chimera, created the VR experience with Otten's class at Temple University. The students appear as avatars in the virtual classroom, and the teacher shows up as either an avatar or real video that's live or recorded.
This still gets the feeling of being a community. Our sound is positional. So if that person spoke and they were to my left, I knew to look to the left and I would see them.
Improvements in VR hardware allow headsets and handheld controllers to track head and hand movements through cameras and sensors. When participants move their hands in the real world, their avatar's hands also move. The technology has allowed a growing number of companies, such as Pagoni VR, to create a virtual reality meeting space for users. With increased demand, the biggest challenge is getting VR headsets during the pandemic. Shutdowns.
Hardware availability, a lot of it is where the hardware is manufactured, so a point being made that a lot of this is coming from China.
As factories start making headsets again, anyone thinking of trying a VR meeting probably shouldn't be immersed for more than an hour at a time in a heavy headset, warns Ottens.
Usually the dizziness and headaches would start towards the last 5 to 10 minutes, I could tell. It was right around the time. It was almost like my body's like, I'm done.
Other applications for a VR meeting include worship services and entertainment. Elizabeth Lee, VOA News.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. Like us on Facebook, VOA Asia. Follow us on Twitter, @VOA Asia. You can find us on Instagram and YouTube and at voanews.com. Thanks for joining us. Thanks to our managing editor, Diane Gao. Our VOA Asia team includes Doug Bernard, Keith Lane, Amy Poppleboom, and Jim Stevenson. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Enjoy the day ahead.